I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Darts legend John Lowe is coming up on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. But do you know what Patreon is? Well, I just want to tell you about it because Patreon is a crowdfunding website. It's a platform to help creators all across the world get funding for their projects. And we have now put The Best in the World with Richard Parr on Patreon. So if you would like to support us for as little as $1 a month, then you can do that by going to patreon.com/bestintheworld. That's patreon.com/bestintheworld. And if you start contributing more than a dollar, there's lots of extra benefit for you other than just this podcast every single week, where you learn from Olympic champions, world record holders, and world number ones. And just quickly do the maths. Let's say that there's 4 episodes in 1 month and you're paying $1 a month. You're paying 25 cents a week. That's 25 cents an episode to learn from the very best in the world. And you know, sometimes you can't put a price on knowledge, and at the moment we're doing it for $1 a month. We're doing it for 25 cents an episode. So if you can find it in the goodness of your hearts to help support our podcast, please go to patreon.com/bestintheworld. All right, on this week's episode, episode 77 of The Best in the World with Richard Parr, we are speaking to the former darts world champion, John Lowe. He is really one of the innovators of the sport. Old Stoneface talks about a whole range of topics on this week's podcast, including him becoming the first player ever to achieve a 9-dart finish on television. That's back in 1984. He also talks about his rivalry and now his friendship with Eric Bristow. He talks about that nickname, Old Stoneface, plus his role in forming the Professional Darts Corporation. It's a fascinating story. And John even talks about the time he was fed snake by fellow darts player Paul Lim. It's a very funny story. And that's all coming up with John Lowe. And in fact, it's coming up next here on The Best in the World.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
John Lowe, welcome to The Best in the World with Richard Parr. So delighted that you are our first darts player on the program, a 3-time world champion. John, so great to have you on the show. Let's start by just catching people up with what you're up to at the moment, please.
Well, I'm still heavily involved in darts. At a different level. Obviously, I'm not competing on the big circuit anymore. I finished that a few years ago. But I'm still doing exhibitions. I'm tied up quite a lot with Mike Millan Nurses Charity, where I'm spending a lot of time down south at the moment, where we do many, many, many shows and raise quite a lot of money for me. And that's rewarding, very rewarding. So I'm still active, still within the game.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah, it's always good to give back. And did I see also that you've got an app as well out?
I have. I've actually had one or two apps, but not like this one. I've had one, the Art of Darts, that was totally a coaching app. But this one's more, it's a game. It was brought about by a guy called Ben Holmes from Chesterfield, where I live. He produced it and wanted me, well, he didn't produce it. He actually designed it. Someone else produced it. It's called John Lowe's Darts Arcade, and there's 10 games within it that you use darts, but you don't throw them conventionally. You just sort of shove them up the screen. It's an iPhone, iPad app at the moment, and I'm pleased to say it's doing really well.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'll put a link to that on the description page of this podcast as well. So for anyone who hasn't downloaded it yet, they can do that as well. With the art of darts, of course, I was looking at a few YouTube videos earlier as well. And there was one in particular where you were giving your tips for darts players and things like that. One of the things about you is you had what some people call like the perfect throwing technique. And I'd like to just talk about that for a moment. And what is the one thing you think that a lot of darts players fail to do, but would actually make them a lot more consistent in their action?
Well, the stance where they stand at the throwing line, the hockey, is slightly wrong. If they're too face on to the board, and when their elbow then, right-handed or left, will protrude out. And that's the big letdown of nearly all. That's the difference between being good and very good. And it's also the difference between being proficient and efficient. And it's all about keeping the elbow in. It you can relate it to snooker, really, where the cue action, the elbow's vertical from the cue. And it's the same with darts. If that elbow's out, when they bring the arm back to throw the dart, the elbow wobbles around. And it's only a small margin between treble 20 and treble 1. And if you can eliminate that as much as you can, then you're going to be a better player.
With your consistent style, have you seen anyone perform in the last few years, perhaps, who have got such a different style to you but are just as successful?
I have, yes. Whether they'll be successful with longevity, I mean, Phil Taylor self-admits that he copied my style. He had his own style, but then he brought in parts of my style, which has kept him going for 20-odd years and 16 world titles. I'm not taking the blame for that, the credit for that, but it's nice to know. And then you've got Michael van Gerwen, who's the top of the tree now, completely different, leans right forward, throws so fast that time to think, he eliminates that from the game. But will he carry on for as long as myself and Taylor?
We'll have to wait and see. And you mentioned there about Phil was watching and took lessons from your stance and your style. Who were some of the players that you would kind of learn from when you were starting to play?
I had a close friend in Chesterfield called Barry Twomlow. He won the News of the World in 1979. And he was, I would say, a mentor. Not possibly with his style, because he had a very hard throwing style. It was easy, though. He didn't put any strain on his back apart from his body that in years to come you wouldn't be able to play. But I did learn a lot from him, a lot.
Now, on this podcast, I've interviewed all different types of sports stars from all the different Olympic sports. And one of the common themes is that a lot of them play in their early years, 6, 7, 8. A lot of rowers are the one kind of exceptions where they play more, they start more around 18, 19. Is it true that you got your first real start in darts at the age of 21?
I never threw a dart till I was 21.
Wow.
I didn't. I'm from a very religious background, and so first and foremost, it was a church upbringing. And then when I did get to like the 16, 17 mark, I started racing clubmen, racing motorcycles. And I was really wrapped up in that. And then I happened to, one afternoon, I was going to a racetrack, and it was snowing, so I called in a local pub. Someone asked me, he was going to the toilet, he said, will you take my throw? And then I've played ever since.
Wow. And was it just a real love for the game immediately?
No. Again, I'm a carpenter by trade, a joiner. And that's a very accurate trade. with hand tools and not electric tools. It's very accurate. You have to saw on a line. And I thought this darts, I tried everything I could to make it easy. Eliminate everything except hitting the target. And I messed around with stems and cut flights down. And eventually I managed to get these things going where I wanted them without too much effort.
Oh, wow.
I think that was I suppose it's very similar to a soccer player taking penalty after penalty after penalty. It's a similar thing, you know, but the coordination between the hand eye and the arm, it must relate to most sports.
Mm. So how long did that take you? How long did it take for you to realise that you were really good at this and this was something which you could take seriously and compete in major championships?
Well, I always took it seriously because even though there's nothing in it, there's no money, you'd play in a local league and at the end of the season you'd win a Japanese alarm clock or a tea service or something like that. And so you didn't get anything monetary, not really. And I always believed it would always be a pastime. And then along came a darts organisation, the British Darts Organisation, put it on television. And from there on, money came in. And then, I have to be honest, I was really interested then because you can't spend trophies. And, you know, and once the money side came in, I started actually playing seriously. I used to play about 5 hours a day for no reason. Then I started playing 5 hours a day for a reason, and I think that made the difference.
Let's have an idea then, John. This is one of the things I really like to cover on this programme. Give us an idea of a typical training day, what it would be like for you, what time you'd get up, perhaps what you were even eating through the day, where you would go, how many hours practice would you do, and what types of practice would you do. Just give us a sense of what was a typical training day back in your prime.
Well, if I was pre that, when I was still a carpenter going to work, in the winter, we couldn't do anything until it came light. So I'd actually get up and play in the morning, an hour and a half before I went to work. And then at lunchtime, I'd visit a pub and play darts while I had something to eat. And then at night time, I'd be in a league. So unconsciously, I'd probably be playing 6 hours a day.
Wow.
But then when it became a profession, you're on the road travelling quite a lot. So you don't actually get as much time to practice. When you do, you've got to make it a serious practice session. Not throwing at treble 20 all the time. That becomes, well, a bore. Practice is boring, for all sports. But I used to be a big believer in going round the doubles hour after hour, just double one, double two, double three, because if you can't finish, you can't play the game. And then I spent 2 months just throwing at bullseye alone. Never threw anything other than bullseye.
Oh, wow. Now, speaking of that, and just going back to what you were saying about the consistency of being like other sports, like taking penalties all the time, one of the guests I've had on this program before was the Olympic champion in clay pigeon shooting, a guy called Richard Foles, who won it in 2000. And he was talking about when he won in the 2000 final and he beat the reigning champion. And a bit like darts, he said, when you're clay pigeon shooting, all you're doing is you're shooting at the same target. You know when it's coming, you know how to do it. You've got the hand-eye coordination technique. And he said, what the difference was that he won on that day is that his opponent had almost like a little mental breakdown. He couldn't concentrate. How important is the psychology side for a darts player, but more importantly, what made you better than other people at it?
Well, a lot of games are won because the other guy loses. That's a known fact. I mean, I played Eric Bristow at Jolly's in the World Championships, and I was 3-0 up. Now, to me, that was impossible to lose that match. And I did. I lost the match. And it wasn't that he played any better. I just dropped off and didn't play as good. So it's what you say, keeping that concentration, that's the most important thing. It's got to be there all the time. Don't really play the other guy. Play the dartboard itself. Play your game. If you're in front, you've got to stay in front and finish. And I've seen many a game, especially Phil Taylor's opponents, where Phil has just been too good for them and they've dropped off. He's won quite a few world titles, in my opinion, that the other guy just lost.
Did you always find it easy to kind of shut off the noise of the crowd?
No, I never did, and I can't understand anyone who says that they never hear them. I've played at Alexandra Palace in the News of the World finals, and there was 21,000 in there that day.
Wow.
And it was impossible not to hear them. I mean, you know, the saving grace is that we're not facing them. You've got the back to the audience, and you're looking at the board, so that helps a little. But you can't block the noise out, I don't think.
Was there anything funny at all which the crowd may have said before which had caught you kind of off your guard and made you lose your concentration at all?
I tried not to. I got the reputation of being called Old Stoneface for that reason. Because what I used to do, I used to concentrate right up until I'd actually picked the trophy up for winning and the cheque, and then everything had changed. I'd be a different person. But while ever I was on that stage, and a lot of the time you're playing against good friends. They're not enemies. They're good friends. But while you're playing them, you could really say that they become a foe. Yeah, you definitely want to beat them.
You mentioned there about facing people, and you had quite the rivalry over the years with Eric Bristow. And please correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe he'd beaten you in three world championships before you finally beat him in the 87 final. Was there anything you did differently when you faced him, or was it just your day that day?
No, that day I was quite a lot better than him. And some of the others, I mean, I was in the world final 8 times and only won 3. I believe I should have won 5 and lost 3. I think that's the way it... looking back on it, and two of them should definitely have been against Eric. But our rivalry, it wasn't just the world final, it was all over the world. That was fierce rivalry. And yet, we played for England world pairs and team, and we played together as a team. We played absolutely... A lot of people thought we didn't like each other, but if truth's known, we're actually going holiday together now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing. That's lovely. Do you think... because of this rivalry, it improved both of your performances and results?
I do, yeah. It kept us on our toes. And one of us was in the world final 11 years in a row, which is quite a record. And the last book that I wrote, I looked at all these statistics, and there was only 0.3 difference in averages over 27 years.
Wow.
So that's incredible. And when people say the game's now, the standard's a lot higher, we haven't had an average over all that time of 29.9, which is near enough 90th.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, that's colossal.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
We'll be back with John in just a moment. And if you're enjoying this podcast or you've enjoyed some of the previous episodes, I would love it if you can help support our show on our new crowdfunding page. It's at Patreon. That's patreon.com/bestintheworld. You can contribute to keep this podcast going for as little as $1 a month. It's not really very much money, is it, for the amount of amazing knowledge that we get from these Olympic and world champions. That address again is patreon.com/bestintheworld. All right, let's return to the conversation with the darts world champion, John Lowe.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
One of the things I like to talk about on this podcast with a lot of the athletes and sports stars is about their diet. It is about what they're eating. And of course, people look back at darts and they see that players used to drink alcohol on the hockey, on the stage. A lot of the players were a little bit overweight, and you were someone who was always pretty slim when competing. Did you ever think about what you were eating back then? Did that make any difference, do you think?
Yes, I do, because if you're travelling, I mean, in those days, all our money was made in exhibitions, so we were basically travelling every day. And then when you'd finished at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, the only place that was open was either an Indian restaurant or a Chinese. There was none of the food that was really healthy for you, and especially at 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. And so I purposely tried to change what time I ate. And I used to eat religiously, if I could, about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I was okay till breakfast. As for drinks, when it came originally darts onto TV, they really just took the game out of the pub and put it on TV. And so they brought everything with it. And it was never banned. The alcohol was never banned by the government or smoking on television. It was banned by the Darts Association. They did it themselves 10 years before the government ever introduced it. So they did take the right steps.
Talking about television, we have to talk about you being the first player to do a 9 dart finish on TV. I believe it was 1984. Tell me about that experience, John, because it's just such an incredible feat.
It was, and the more I look back on it, I've always thought to win the World Championship was the biggest thing. But if now, looking back on it years later, I realised that the 9 dart game actually did make me world known in darting circles, and since the introduction of YouTube, even bigger. Mm. But it was, when I look at it, the lads doing it on TV now and then doing it then, the dartboard now, is the target area is 14% bigger now, because the wires are razor blade thin, whereas we had big round wires with staples holding them onto the board, and it was a lot harder, a lot more difficult. For me personally, there was four or five players expected to do it within 5 or 6 years. And it never happened. And I was the one that came out that day, the 13th of October, at Slough, and put the old perfect game together.
Mm-hmm. How many times do you think you've done it in competition?
I've never actually accepted any other 9 dart game, because I've never done it in a serious competition. I mean, I have done it quite a few times, but I haven't actually done it in what I regard as a competition of any note. And it wasn't done again for a few more years. Paul Lim followed it up on BBC about 6 years later.
Mentioning Paul Lim, this is a little bit of an aside here, but while doing my research, Paul Lim, I believe, is also a very well-trained chef. And did I read a story correctly here, John, that he once served you rat?
I think he claimed that. I mean, I did visit Singapore, and he did serve me snake, I will tell you that.
Oh,
that's
wow.
For sure. And I was quite... It was unbelievable how it tasted. It tasted as nice as lobster. And that's... Quite an incredible story. This was traditional Chinese, Singaporean cooking, where the snakes were on, hanging on poles around the back of the restaurant.
Oh my goodness!
And they brought it in and showed you it, and it was quite an experience. They slit the top of the snake and pushed the little sack out, which was the poison in it, to show you it hadn't burst and gone into the snake. And then they asked you how I wanted it cooking. And Paul cooked it, and I said lobster, and it came with like round looking balls, white meat, and tasted gorgeous.
Oh wow! I was in Kenya a few weeks ago from when we're having this conversation, and I actually got to try oxen's testicles, which I wouldn't recommend.
No.
not very healthy, and definitely not the type of food you were probably eating when you were competing. But let's move on from that little side topic we were talking about there, John. And of course, you had your success in the World Championships, and one of the other key parts of your career was your involvement and your influence in creating what is now the PDC, breaking away from the BDO. Just tell us a little bit about that time, John, and how that all came about and your involvement in it.
Well, I was involved in a big way for the simple reason we'd formed a players' association with its objectives of a meeting with the British Darts organisation and discussing how we could take the game forward, because we were down to like two tournaments a year. We only had the World Championship and the World Masters. We had England, we were playing for England, but we didn't get any monetary chance. So to make money as a professional, we needed more tournaments on TV. So the talks came to nothing. So one day we decided we'd break away. So the 16 top players would break away. With the help of a couple of organisers, we couldn't do it on our own, and formed the World Darts Council. That's how the PDC was originally known. And of course, it changed the old darts game completely. First of all, it turned nasty, and they suspended us for 2 years. That affected us livelihood. And then we went to court with a restriction of trade against them, of which we won hands down, although no one got any money or anything out of it. All we did was collectively lost about $250,000.
Oh, wow.
And then it wasn't going well. The World Arts Council was struggling to bring money and sponsors in. And then the guy called Barry Earn appeared on the scene, and he turned it round. He, with his help of his matchroom expertise, they turned it round, and now we've got what is a, in this country alone, it's $6 million prize money this year.
Yeah, it's crazy, the expansion of sport. And we'll talk more about that in just a moment. Why didn't the BDO want more events on TV? Because, you know, sitting here, it's all very easy, me sat here, but looking 25 years ago, surely it just makes sense to put more events on TV, doesn't it? What was their opposition to it?
They didn't have any opposition to it. What they did have, they didn't have the expertise. They didn't have a plan to bring in sponsorship. They was settled with the people who had always been with them. They'd not gone out and sought new sponsors to come on board or change the formats. I mean, what was happening on TV, someone would say to me in the street, that tournament, it's not finished yet. I see it's still on, because it was the same format all the time. And of course, they thought it was the same one carrying on the next week. And so it needed somebody to come in with a plan. And the BDO, they just didn't have a plan. The only plan they had was that if the game went, they would go with it completely, instead of putting it out to a promotional company that could push it forward.
And you mentioned there about the prize funds now being up to $6 million, and there's events now all across the world, from Las Vegas, Australia. How proud are you of having a little part in that history, of helping create what is going on now?
I'm very proud. I mean, I was the chairman and the secretary of the Professional Players Association, to an extent where I even did the books for Companies House for 8 years and kept it running. I said that would have folded as well.
That's a stressful job in itself.
It was, and so I was really pleased about that. But I will say that when we split, I was a world champion, so I didn't get a chance to defend the embassy, as it was called then. But Peter Dyke at Embassy rang me one day, and he tried to split the pact, and he offered me £20,000 to go back and do a few shows for Embassy. And if I'd have left the 16 and gone back, the Sky TV thing would never have happened, because the players would have disintegrated. So in one way, I look back on it and I'm proud, but in another way, I sometimes think, did I do the right thing there?
Are you slightly envious of what's going on now? Do you wish that this was happening back in your era? Do you wish that you were able to compete around the world now as well?
No, I'm not. And I can speak for Eric Bristow as well on that. We're both the same. We both say, look, we did what we did. We brought the game to the masses. And unfortunately, it didn't fizzle out and fade away. So we can honestly say the success of the game around the world now, we did contribute to it. And we are getting asked, because of its success now, we do get asked to do appearances. I do go along with Jeff Miller, the cricketer, who lives not far around the corner from me. I do a few shows with him in London where we do sporting dinners and things like that. That would never have happened if the game wasn't in the forefront like it is now.
And one of the things which is very famous with darts these days is a lot of the entrance music and everything like that. And of course, yours was Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple. Was that something you chose, and did it help you at all? Did it help pump you up for any performance, or did you almost like switch off to that?
It didn't help in a way. And I watched some of them on TV and they were nervous when they walked down, taking them 5 minutes to get to the stage. But it put a bit of glamour onto the game. It put something into it that I see now snooker's copied it. So, and it seems to work for snooker. It seems to be brings a bit more lightheartedness to it before the battle commences, as it were. And I think darts has not got its characters that we had when there was myself, Jockey Wilson, Leighton Rees, Eric, Big Cliff Lazarenko. It's not quite got them characters, but it has brought some glamour to it that wasn't there.
Do you think, if darts was to continue to grow, what would be some of your recommendations you think it could do to keep getting bigger and better?
Well, again, I think it's time to change the format. I did the first 9 dart game, which was 501. It's been done on TV so many times in the last decade that no one puts any money up for it at all now. It's like a rolling pot. Whatever's in the pot, the winner gets it. It's done quite consistently. So I think it's time now we moved up, put another 100 on, move it up to 601, and let's have the perfect 601 game. I have suggested that to the PDC, and I fully expect they'll take note shortly.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. John, it's been really good to talk to you today. We've really learnt a lot from you. I'm so glad that I've had this moment to get to speak to you. John, just before we go, is there any way we can continue to follow what you're up to through a website, through social media, or if there's anything else you'd like us to know about that you can promote, John?
Yes, I've got my own website. It's www.john-vo.com. I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and numerous books, and of course YouTube, anyone that wants to watch the 9 dart game, or it's on the front of my site, and I do believe it hit 1 million. It's a couple of weeks back on one of the recordings that's on there, which is the best one, because that was the one where Dickie Davis did the interviews, and he was first class.
Fantastic. Well, John, it's been first class speaking to you. Thank you for being on the programme, and thank you for being the best in the world.
Thank you very much.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
It was a real honour to have John Lowe as our first ever darts guest on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. And we've had other British legends on the programme before. Maybe go back and listen to my interview with Stephen Hendry, the former snooker world champion. Of course, Darren Campbell,
The British sprinter has been on the podcast as well as the long distance runner Liz McColgan. They've all been on The Best in the World with Richard Parr. You can listen back to them at sportacino.com, also at acast.com/best, and of course on iTunes. And if you are listening to us on iTunes, if you get a moment to give us a rating and review, I would really appreciate it. And if you haven't already, please press the subscribe button so you never miss an episode of The Best in the World with Richard Parr. All right, that's it for this week. I'll be back next week with another Olympic champion, world record holder, or world number one to find out what they do differently to become the very best. I'll speak to you next week. Goodbye.
The Best in the World podcast with Richard Parr.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.